Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, sometimes actor David Dasmalchian looks for the dark, and sometimes the dark finds him, and when it does, well, he has a wellspring of experience to tap into from a myriad of macabre supporting roles that he's played in blockbusters like The Dark Knight and Ant-Man and Dune and Suicide Squads and Oppenheimer. So when two brothers from Australia called him to take the lead in their low-budget horror flick, he said yes.
On Halloween night, 1977, America gathered around for a live TV event that shocked a nation. What happened was real. What you are about to see is the recently discovered master tape of what went to air that night.
Ladies and gentlemen, now here's Mr. Lynch, Jack Dalmore.
Late Night with the Devil.
It's really scary, particularly the visuals, and it stars David Dasmalchian as Jack Delroy, a TV talk show host, late night talk show host, opposite Johnny Carson. He's struggling in the ratings. It's 1977. And in desperation, he dips into the occult for a Halloween night special.
Now, Lily, I understand that you have a name for this thing that lives inside of you.
Mm-hmm. I call him Mr. Wriggles.
And why do you call him that?
He kind of wriggles his way inside my head, and then he wriggles his way out.
But with June's help, you are able to control him.
June says that everyone has a demon inside them, but we can't always control them, can we?
Well, Late Night with the Devil and David Dasmalchian are getting rave reviews, and David joins me now. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Really good. We've just been chatting about the last time we were this terrified, and I said The Ring, and someone else went as far back as The Omen. You must be extremely proud to be in that sort of company and to be associated with such a, I guess, a powerful film.
Aside from my children, few things could make me more proud than knowing that you guys got the pants scared off of you, because I love vintage and classic horror, and I was so excited when we started making this film because it felt like we were playing in a space that was paying so much homage and so much tribute to the horror of yesteryear, and so thank you. I'm very honored.
Yeah, so what did two horror geek indie filmmakers from Australia tell you about why they wanted you to star as Jack, and why did you say yes?
It was very hard for me to say yes, but I'll tell you why in a second. First of all, Colin and Cameron Cairns, the brothers, they sent me through a producer named Roy Lee, who, by the way, was the person who brought the American version of The Ring to the screen. So going back to some great horror.
Yeah.
A guy named Roy Lee, he gave me the script as well as the like digital lookbook that the brothers had made for the film. And it looked like an old-fashioned TV guide of the 70s with all this great imagery, but they had kind of photoshopped my face into the images to make it look like I was the host of this suffering, you know, struggling talk show. And on top of that, they'd written me the most beautiful letter, talking about an article that they'd read that I had written for Fangoria magazine. So with all that combined, I started reading the script. Now, here's the reason why I wanted to say no. It wasn't because it was an indie. It wasn't because there was not a lot of money on the project or anything like that. The reason why was because I didn't think I had it in my bones as an actor to bring to life authentically enough to be convincing to an audience the energy needed for a late night talk show host. That to me scared me more than the first time I saw The Omen or The Shining or The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It scared me so much. And I'll tell you, Jesse, some of the most important things I've done in my life, including the partners that I've chosen, the being a parent, the career path that I've chosen, is when I'm really scared of something, and it's not just intuition, when it's actual fear, trying to face it and walk into it has always been really rewarding. And so I decided, because the boys seemed like such lovely filmmakers who would create a safe space for me, that I would walk into my fear. And I'm so glad I did, because now I'm here talking to you and many other cool people about the movie.
And that is a great way to think about fear. And I wonder if you have a special relationship with fear. As the writer of a horror comic book series, as a self-confessed horror geek yourself, is it the same sort of fear or two distinct types of fear that we're talking about here?
Well, there's a total spectrum when it comes to fear. Since I was a little boy, I was afraid of the dark. I was afraid of death. I was afraid of what lies beyond. What is the thing that, you know, we have to go do or don't do when this life ends? All those kind of big things have scared me since I was a little kid. So with film and cinema and storytelling, comic books, writing, I think horror in particular creates all these amazing metaphors, whether they be through monsters or poltergeists or possessions or serial killers. There's all this wonderful metaphor and symbolic kind of iconography that we can tap into as audience members that go, oh my God, that totally plays on my fear of being an outsider. Oh, that totally plays on my fear of outsiders. Oh, that totally plays on my fear of mortality or my fear of isolation, et cetera. And I love that. I think it's so cool. So to me, it's all one big happy soup that we can go to the cinema together, get scared together, and we have this collective sigh of relief because it's kind of cathartic. And if I ever get a chance to do that with my filmmaking or comic writing or other creations, then it makes me feel like I've really succeeded. Does that make sense?
It does. I love it. And you don't do it, it sounds, for anyone's stamp of approval, apart from, you know, actualization of yourself and your own kind of aspirations. However, if you were going to get a stamp of approval from anyone, it would probably be from Stephen King via tweets on the 50th anniversary of his novel Carrie. And he said he couldn't take his eyes off Late Night with the Devil. That's a great moment, surely.
Do you remember that? Does anybody here old enough like me to remember the Garbage Pail Kids?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Do you remember there was this kid, his name was like Adam Bomb, and it's a little kid whose head is exploding like an atom bomb. It's just like Oppenheimer all over again, except for me, when I read that tweet, that was my brain doing a full explosion at, you know, Los Alamos. It was mind-blowing. I'm a huge fan of Stephen King. I also just got an email the other day from Joe Dante, another one of my great horror heroes. He said that he went to see the film in the cinema and that he thought it was so spectacular. And I'm going to frame all those things and put them on my wall so when I'm feeling down, I could just look at them and go, ah.
Yeah, I love that. Is there a bit of whiplash when you work on big-budget films? You know, the first Dune film, the Batman films, and then you go to Melbourne, particularly during COVID times, and you're working on a film with a budget that's, you know, probably around the same size as the catering budget for The Dark Knight.
I would think that it's probably less. and it is only different in creature comforts and trying to think length of time. Obviously, like on a big movie like The Suicide Squad or some, you know, big studio film like Dune, you go shoot those things for 5-6 months. With a movie like Late Night with the Devil, we had maybe 16-18 days to film entire movie.
Yeah,
but here's the thing that's the same: the work is always the same. Like the work that you're putting in and the work that the artists around you are putting in, it's always the same if you're lucky enough to be surrounded by people who deeply care about the work and have a level of talent and proficiency that can be, you know, inspiring. And I have been so lucky. My gratitude bucket is overflowing because the little small films that I've been able to make seem to be populated by all these incredible artists who are really pushing the limits of film like the Cairns brothers did with Late Night. And then I go work on a film like Oppenheimer with Chris Nolan, and you've got an auteur filmmaker who is pushing the limits of cinema and has all these incredible resources. But at the end of the day, they're all in the same room. We're all doing the same thing. It reminded me of when I was in Chicago, I would do theater for 25 folding chairs in the basement of an old church, and the play and the power and all the energy we would manifest was no different than when I was on one of the big stages doing Shakespeare for, you know, 300 people. It's just, if that makes sense, it feels to me kind of like once the work is happening, it's all the same, except maybe I don't have a nice trailer. I don't get to fly first class or something like that.
Bonus for me is the subject matter. So there's the horror part, and you know, as I said, genuinely terrifying. But then I love all the culture around the late night hosts, and, you know, Carson, Cavett, Jack Parr, you know, Letterman and Leno and Conan, all that sort of stuff. There is a host that I don't recognize the name of, and that's Don Lane, and that was quite a significant one for you, particularly in the prep for this role.
Yes, so Don Lane I had never heard of before. I mean, I had seen one interview of his previously, long time ago, but I never knew his name. And then when I was prepping for the film, I said to the brothers, I expressed very early on, are you sure I'm the right guy for this? Are you sure that you think I could create this? Because it doesn't seem like a character that lives within my wheelhouse as an actor so far. It's definitely different than anything I've ever attempted before on stage or screen. And I said, for me, inspiration material is always so tantamount to my process. So I will watch dozens, if not hundreds of hours of footage when it comes to trying to get the cadence, the voice of a character. So I was watching Carson and Cavett and all these guys, and they sent me the Don Lane clips. And I go, this is my guy. Mm. He was awesome. He was so cool. And he had a thing about his personality and voice that I felt like I could really tap into in an attempt to kind of mimic in building my Jack Delroy.
I love that. Also thought of, you know, is there a metaphor in this film as well with the, you know, I'm an ex-TV host, you know, the kind of deal with the devil you do for ratings success, the choices you have to make. And, you know, for people who haven't seen the film yet, this is a story about a talk show host who will apparently go to any length to get people to tune in. Have you thought about that aspect of it?
Oh, yes. And I think about it as a person who sells my wares to the marketplace. You know, I make movies to be sold, to sell tickets. I make comic books for people to hopefully purchase. I make things that I want people to buy. And sometimes I get so scared because I'm making something and it's like no one's buying it. No one's responding to it. Am I going to sink? Am I going to fail? And the thought of being Jack Delroy and having an entire show resting on your shoulders, trying to honor the memory of your now gone partner, all these pressures that he's living under, not to mention the fact that he's drowning himself in alcohol. I go, would you be capable of bending your own ethical compass, even just a little bit, if you knew that it might save a show that employs 100 people and could honor your dead wife's memory, whatever. Like, whatever the things are that we tell ourselves. And I wish I could say I haven't done that in my life, but I know there's been numerous times, whether it's because of the entertainment industry or in my own personal life, where I've gone, I could bend this little bit of my ethical rules because I know that the end result is maybe more valuable than this momentary lapse of morality or ethics, whatever, you know, the bend is. But it really doesn't usually work out very well.
I'm talking to David Dastmalchian, who is the star of the new movie Late Night with the Devil, which is getting incredible reviews. I'm trying to think if there has been a horror movie that is based around this idea of a late night talk show host before. I immediately thought of talk radio from the 80s, which is slightly different. But
I loved talk radio, by the way. Eric
Bogosian. Oh my gosh. How good is he?
That's a cool one. Yeah, I did a one-man performance of talk radio when I was in high school and I was learning about acting. And I played all of the call-in callers, and then I would be Barry.
Wow.
Barry, hey, this is Barry Champlain. You're on. And then, you know, go, hey, Barry. And I tried to create all these voices so you would think I was a different actor playing all the voices. It was really fun.
I love the idea that other kids are doing, you know, like Annie and Grace, and you're like, I'm going to do something by Oliver Stone. Sit down, everyone.
Hey, man, the power of teachers. It was a teacher who put that play in my hand and goes, I think you'll dig this, because she knew I was a total wild guy, yeah. Right?
Well, for people who haven't seen it yet, you're in for a treat. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for creating this incredible role and this incredible movie. We really appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you so much. All right. I'll see you on the other side.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.